Welcome to Vox Lab, the podcast series of Precision Talks, and listen to the voices of the scientists working towards precision toxicology to better protect human health and the environment.
Welcome to this first episode of Vox Lab, the Precision Talks podcast. I'm today with Trudy McKay from Clemson University. Hello, Trudy. Thank you for being with us. Hello.
Hello, Jean.
You are the director of Clemson University Center for Human Genetics. You have received several awards and honors for your work on the genetics and environmental factors affecting the expression of genes. Can you explain your field of research today?
Certainly. So I'm a quantitative geneticist by training. And what quantitative genetics is the study of traits that vary continuously in populations. I think we can understand it easily by thinking of human populations, where we have continuous variation in height, in weight, in blood pressure, and indeed susceptibility to common human diseases. And these traits are fairly difficult to study and almost impossible at the molecular level until the late 1980s, early 1990s. Although the statistical foundations go back over 100 years ago to Sir Ronald Fisher, who was the first to reconcile the idea of Mendelian segregation with large effects with continuous variation. And he simply proposed that there were many, many genes, and that each of these genes had a relatively small effect on the trait we're looking at, say height. And so I was wanting to find out what the genes were, and I started my career doing some transposable element mutagenesis experiment, and quite quickly determined that, at least in terms of the mutational spectrum, that Fisher was quite right. There really are many genes, but they fall into pathways that make sense. And then we hit the molecular era. We were able to then find genetic markers and indeed make whole genome sequences. And that's the space we're in now, our ability to sequence many genetically different organisms. And actually, instead of quantitative genetics being the science of complex statistics, now being a science of complex genetics.
You are now involved with several of your colleagues at Clemson University in the Precision Talks project, yes. An international project funded by the European Union, aiming to develop methods to accelerate the assessments of chemicals without the use of mammalians. The project relies on 5 organism models, as well as human cell lines, and on the concept of phylotoxicology. Can you explain what it is exactly?
So the idea of phylotoxicology is that there are common underlying pathways and networks that can be found from simpler eukaryotes, such as C. elegans, Drosophila, zebrafish, and humans, and that by understanding what those simpler evolutionarily conserved mechanisms are, we'll get a very clean picture of what happens when organisms across biodiversity are exposed to toxicants.
So in particular, the project uses fruit fly, Drosophila, also worms, and frogs embryos, zebrafish embryos that you mentioned them. And your team focus in particular on fruit flies. When we think of fruit flies, we first think of how to get rid of them when they are in our kitchen. But how come that science has developed such an interest in Drosophila?
Well, this again is nearly 100 years old. When Thomas Hunt Morgan found the very first mutation in a fruit fly, a white-eyed mutation. So they have been the darling of geneticists ever since that time, because we could work out basic principles of inheritance, not only for developmental traits, but also for quantitative traits. What is interesting, I think, that most people won't know, that the fruit fly, which looks nothing like a human, 75% of human disease genes have a counterpart, or technically an ortholog, in the fruit fly, which is really quite amazing. So it means that the general principles of what we find by studying fruit flies are likely to be evolutionarily conserved across the tree of life, but also that particular genes may well translate widely.
So getting more into the details, it means that some expression of genes are conserved between humans and Drosophila through evolution.
Well, I mean, this is a bit of a technical point. The genes themselves are conserved. It's very possible that their expression is different, because the expression is determined by the regulatory or non-coding parts of the genome. And that is more divergent between flies and humans. But the truth is that the genes and the relationships between the genes are likely to be conserved.
And that would allow you to measure and assess the effects of chemicals on humans.
Absolutely, that's the hope. And of course, any one model, the beauty of the Phylotox project is that any one model organism is going to have both genes that are conserved across the tree of life and genes that are quite specific to that organism. So with Phylotox, doing the five different model organisms and the human cell lines, we can tease out which are which. We'll know which are specific, and we'll know which are in common.
So concretely, how are you going to proceed? What will be the methodology applied to develop this method?
So what we have in flies is our lab, Robert Anholt, my colleague on this project, and myself. We in this case, is Dr. Richard Lyman, who spearheaded the development of the Drosophila Genetic Reference Panel. Currently, 1,200 genetically distinct fly lines. And these flies were all caught in the Raleigh Farmers Market, so a fairly natural population from North Carolina. And then the wild-caught flies were brother sister mated for 20 generations. So this is just a breeding scheme. And the consequence of that, of those generations of mating, is that we've taken the variation within that wild population and we've transferred it to variation between these inbred lines. And so each inbred line represents a population of genetically identical individuals. And so they can be shared with the whole community, and indeed they are publicly available. And what we will do then is utilize these lines to understand the effect of toxic chemicals on survival of the flies. That's the easiest and first things that we'll do, is to figure out the dose response, as well as with smaller doses, neurological effects on behaviors.
So you're going to monitor how the flies react to chemicals in order
that's exactly correct. And we're going to look at multiple chemicals. They haven't quite all been chosen yet, but many of them will have the same mode of action, and many of them will have different modes of action. And so we can use these chemicals to figure out how the different pathways converge and diverge.
You mentioned the fact that you use a family of Drosophila that conserves the same genetic similarities. What is the advantage of this?
So what it means is that we can use the same genotypes to evaluate multiple different toxicants. And the advantage of flies over other model systems is the sheer number of these genetically divergent genotypes we have. This is the largest population of genetically diverse genotypes available in any model organism.
And so you are going to work on both male and female flies as well?
Always, because there are always differences between the sexes.
And how many flies will be used for each chemical that you will be testing?
Tens of thousands.
The project will last for 5 years and you will test thousands of flies. But how long does a fly live?
How long does a fly live? Well, one of our other projects, not related to phyllotox, is lifespan. And so the answer to that question is it kind of varies from about a month to 3 months, say.
So that helps accelerate, I guess, the time to assess chemicals as compared to other mammalian models, right?
It does, but we speed that up because in our assays, we do what's called a dose response curve. And we find a dose that can speed up our experiments so that the flies will actually die within a week. And that way we can look at multiple chemicals per year with large numbers of animals.
What result do you expect from the studies of Drosophila? I think you made your team, and it was researched before, several experimentation well done already on lead, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. We have done experiments, it's identical to what we're proposing in the Precision Talks project for lead and cadmium, as well as paraquat and metadiol. And in those cases, what we found is that when we expose the flies of these different genotypes to the chemicals, some are more resistant and some are more sensitive. And we can map the genes conferring resistance and sensitivity. And then we can go one step further because in flies, we really have a good background knowledge of what gene-gene interactions are. So we can map our findings onto known gene-gene interaction networks and actually understand the function of these genes, often known for their role in neurodevelopment, in terms of sensitivity and resistance to the chemicals.
So you will both study the resistance and the
sensitivity. Yes. So the interesting thing about the lead and the cadmium experiment, they're both heavy metals. And we thought that there would be some commonalities between them as well as some differences. And indeed there were. The core network was very, very similar for lead and for cadmium.
And apply to Precision Talks, what do you expect as a result?
I think we'll find, we'll be able to fill in the details for a wider spectrum of chemicals, perhaps working via different pathways. And I hope to see how those pathways crosstalk and interact. I also, we are work package 4. So we're paired with the Human Cell Line Project, which is almost the same experimental design, where our Finnish colleagues have human cell lines from all over the world, which is kind of the same as saying you've got fly lines that represent the diversity of flies. Well, in the Finnish lab, they have cell lines representing the diversity of humans. And so they'll be doing parallel experiments on the cell lines. And I think that's going to be the really, really exciting part, which is to cross map the responses of the cell lines with the living animals, as well as with all of the other organisms that are being used in the project.
Why is it important to use several organism models in this project? What is the added value?
Well, I think it's twofold. One is we are interrogating a spectrum of genetic diversity from within a population to cross species. So again, we'll find out what's conserved and what's different. But the other beauty of this project is that much of the early work is going to be very detailed characterization of the effects of the chemicals on gene expression via RNA sequencing on the metabolome. But because these are very detailed and expensive endeavors and are being done for a large number of different chemicals, you can't ask the genetic diversity questions. And so how the arms of the project work is that first we look at all of the different chemicals, a large number of them, 250, and do the experiments on intermediate molecular mechanisms on a single representative of each of the organisms. And then we move on to saying what impact the genetic diversity is going to have on those mechanisms.
Because this is something that we are not able to assess at this stage. What is the state of science to measure variation of susceptibility at this stage?
It's just a matter of scale. Everything can be done, but the more genotypes you add, I mean, for example, let's just look at the phylotox experiment. We're looking at 250 chemicals on one Drosophila genotype. I'm looking at, say, 8 chemicals on 200 Drosophila genotypes. So the scale is the same, but in one case, we're going not so much across chemicals, although we are doing 8 or so, but across genotypes. And that's where it just is a sensible way of partitioning the labor.
The projects contribute to one of the objectives of the EU to reduce, replace, and refine mammalian testing.
Yes.
In what way does the project participate in this objective?
Well, I think, well, obviously flies are not vertebrates. They have many other advantages, of course. They have a very short generation time. And like I said, they have enough orthology to humans to make it a reasonable supposition that what we find in flies will actually be translational. And then the other aspect of that is we will have the human cell lines. And we can see to what extent the different models are good substitutes for testing in a mouse, in a rabbit, which causes a lot of pain to the animals.
The other objective is to accelerate the chemical assessment, to give regulator new tools,
yes,
to better protect human health and the environment. How will this project will contribute to this objective? How come the method will be faster than the existing one?
Well, it just is. I mean, the short generation time and the fact that we can test thousands of flies in short periods of time, really, that itself is an acceleration, the economy of scale with a very fast very rapid generation cycle and the ability to breed like literally hundreds of thousands of flies in a room the size of a closet. When this project is complete, we're going to have so much new data that we can analyze to understand the role these chemicals play. I mean, the environment is not just the physical environment, but also the environment of other organisms that are all exposed to the same toxicant. And so we should be able to understand in a global way the nature of genotype by environment interaction, which is something that, I mean, the project is directly addressing it, but it's even broader than toxicology. It goes into climate change. It goes into any environmental change facing organisms today and the ability to adapt to those changes.
Will we also learn more about the biology of other animals apart from humans?
Well, we should in the sense that when we find these common pathways from worms to flies to human cells, then we can fairly safely assume that those common pathways are likely to also be common to organisms that we haven't studied. And so I believe that the way I'm not an expert in chemical testing, so if I say something wrong, please forgive me. But I do believe that we are still going to have to use vertebrate animals in our testing. But the idea is, if you have very specific hypotheses, you can dramatically, dramatically cut down on the use of these animals.
During this series of episodes, I will interview your colleagues working on other organism models. Why is fly to you the best animal models that we have in Precision Talks?
Well, I'm biased, of course, but I think that the different models have different purposes. What I really like about the flies is this whole aspect of genetic diversity, which simply is not available in the other organisms. I mean, there are some different strains that are being used, but I really think that the genetic diversity is what makes the fly part of this project very exciting.
Thank you very much, Trudy, for sharing all this information with us. We're looking forward to see the results and data of Precision Talks accumulating throughout the 5 years that will last this project to better protect human health and the environment. Thank you very much, Trudy. Thank you. And I invite you to follow us on Twitter and to follow us on the Precision Talks website to discover more about precision toxicology and all the different organism models that we have in the project. Thank you very much, Trudy.
Thank you, Sean. I really enjoyed speaking to you.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To learn more about precision toxicology and listen to the new episodes of VoxLam, visit our website, precisiontox.org, and follow us on Twitter at precisiontox. This project has received the financial support of the European Union's Horizon 2020 program. The content of this program only reflects the author's view. The EU cannot be held responsible for any information contained therein.